life's gone down the drain. Your body's wrecked with pain. There's just one thing to blame. Dynamite in the brain. Dynamite in the brain. Dynamite in the brain. Dynamite in the brain.
Thanks for listening. Brian Smith and Anthony Askew here on episode 92 of Dynamite in the Brain, the podcast that loves anime and hates fun. It is May the 18th, 2013, and joining us today is Bradley C. Meek.
Howdy, y'all.
Howdy to you, Bradley. Let's go to our first regular feature, which is the UK anime releases for the coming week. And first up, out on Blu-ray and on DVD, is Helsing Ultimate, episodes 5 to 8. Are you looking forward to this, Anthony?
I am, actually. I've got a note here that this is just a big wake-up call, because it just says that I need to buy 1 to 4.
Again, after you again. Sold them.
Well, I haven't even got them sold, but they're Region 1s, and I would like to have them all. It's kind of all or none. So it's a bit of a wake-up call to think that I should probably get watching these, because I've not seen 4 onwards, I think, so.
I don't know if we've had... Have we had 1 to 4 as a set?
Not as a set, because I was actually... That was the very first thing I looked for, and there's not a set. So it's very strange to have 5 to 8.
We've had them as a set here in the US.
No, we haven't. I did actually look, because I would have got them both.
It is a little odd. I don't know whether that's coming later. I never go to these industry panels at any of these events, so I've never never heard if anyone's answered that question. It would seem it would be a question which had been asked of manga.
Maybe forgot. Simple as it.
Tweet him, let him know. Did you forget? You put in at 5 and 8, you're not putting out 1 to 4 yet.
But yeah, I'll probably be picking these up. Whether it's on Blu-ray or regular, I don't know. I think it's about £3 difference.
Yeah, something like that. It's at the moment on Amazon, it's £21.50 for the DVD set and £25.25 for the Blu-ray. Though you can get that cheaper at Sainsbury's.
Sainsbury's is like the best place for anime DVDs.
It's an interesting discovery that, yes, they are stocking them, at least on their online site. And they do tend to be cheaper than Amazon.
Crazy.
And like that Penguin Drum, which I have got, which I don't think we've mentioned, that was the place I got Penguin Drum cheap for £13.
Is it still on for that price?
I believe so. It was last time I looked. It's labelled incorrectly. It says it's the complete collection when it's only half the TV series. But it's also priced incorrectly at £12.99.
What do they know? I can't find it on their website.
Could you not?
No.
I've tweeted it numerous times. So.
I'll have a peek.
Check it out there. And the other thing is K-On! With 2 exclamation marks, indicating that it is the second series, part 1 on DVD.
Yay.
You're a big K-On! Fan, Bradley?
Not particularly, actually. K-On! Is... It has its ups and downs, you know, and I think the second season had a lot more of it, but when it's on, I quite love it. I think the early episodes of the second season actually are some of its strongest, and also some of its most cinematic. They had made the second season after they had finished the Haruhi movie, and you can see how some of the aesthetics of the Haruhi movie transferred to some of the early episodes of K-On!. And it makes for some really beautiful episodes. So even if you don't necessarily like K-On!, but you do like animation and the art of animation, you should watch some of the early episodes of that DVD set.
I like K-On! When it's been re-edited and rescored and used in funny music videos rather than actually watching the TV series itself. Because, yeah, as you say, the animation's great, but I don't like the comic timing and I don't like the scoring.
Mm-hmm.
But so I will not be buying this DVD set.
I've never seen K-On! Ever.
You should try it. It's the so-called slice of life comedy that even people who don't think they like it will... Some of them end up liking it. It's definitely one to try.
Okay, but you're talking to a man who ducked out doing the Azumanga Daioh podcast.
Yeah.
That's true.
What was the reason for that again?
I can't remember, but whatever the reason was, you were happy that you didn't have to do it.
One day
and
I will.
It is very girly, Anthony. It might offend your manly sensibilities.
Do you know something? I've been. I'm open to this, the girly stuff now. I've been.
Oh, the Magical Girl show changed your mind?
Yeah, I think that was the.
You have grown as an otaku. Congratulations, Anthony. I'm proud of you.
Well, I'm proud as well, I think.
And that's your lot for UK anime releases this week. So, it's that time again. Sit down. Put your feet up. Lean back into your chair as we ask Bradley, what you watch?
What you watch?
So, gosh, I've been watching a lot of things. You actually happened to catch me on the week just after finals finished.
Oh.
I've had nothing to do but sit down and play video games and watch cartoons. So, I have been watching 10 series that are currently airing in Japan at the moment. 10 cartoons, okay? 10 cartoons. I've also been sampling episodes from a bunch of 2003 anime because I'll need to be getting to writing my Golden Annie article here in the near future. And finally, I've also been watching some other stuff on top of all that. Now, I'm not going to tell you about what I'm currently watching. I'll talk about that in a future podcast that's currently airing. And I'm not going to tell you about the 2003 anime. What I will tell you, however, is something that I'm currently watching every week and have been looking forward to more than anything else in a fairly strong season. And that's Akiba Ranger.
Yay. Yeah, same here.
Yes.
It's the best.
It is the best. It is. I don't even watch Sentai series, and I'm loving this to pieces. It's kind of a, for those of you who don't know, it's Akiba Ranger is kind of a very self-aware meta riff on the famous Super Sentai shows that air in Japan on Saturday morning for little boys ages like 7 to 10, are their demographic or something?
Yeah, I think it's Sunday morning it airs at the moment because it's in that block with Kamen Rider and the Pretty Cure shows.
Right. But there are, of course, also obsessive Sentai fans, much like there who are adults, much like there are obsessive Pretty Cure fans who are adults. And this series kind of riffs on that obsession. And while I don't, all of the references that it makes to Sentai has to be taught to me, and the show does a pretty good job teaching it if you don't know what it's talking about. But I totally relate to, get, and love the way it riffs off of the obsessive otaku culture in Japan, and it also kind of expands that to some of the stuff I can more immediately recognize in anime fandom, and 2D love and waifus. There's a fantastic gag in episode 4 where one hero gets an upgrade thanks to the love of his waifu.
Yeah, because in the first series it's a lot more focused on these three, well, two out and out otaku and then one secretive otaku, and they get tricked into becoming unofficial Sentai by this cafe owner slash scientist slash voice actress, where they go into a delusional world where they think they're superheroes.
Mm-hmm.
And then as the first series goes along, things from the delusional world start appearing in the real world.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the second series seems more about the history of Sentai keeps on getting rewritten by various people's delusions. And also there's delusions in delusions. Because have you watched the first series, Bradley?
Yes.
Yeah, because the first episode of this one completely rewrites the entire continuity of the show.
I loved that. I wondered how they were going to address the ending that they wrote for the first season, and I think they handled it pretty well, or about as well as they possibly could.
But then that casts into doubt everything else you're seeing in the rest of this season too. It's like, what is real and what is a delusion? What's the fiction of the TV show and what's the fiction of what are the other characters maybe accidentally thinking up?
It's deep, man. I tell you what.
Is it convincing you to check out Sentai shows, though? Go back and...
Yes, it is. I would love to now. The thing is, like, my personality is such that when I get into a hobby, I want to master the hobby. I want to know everything about the hobby. And so I tend to focus on one or two things at a time. And adding a third thing makes me go, I don't know if I have the time for that. But this has been so much fun. Like, I'm enjoying it even on just the Sentai level of enjoying the fights, enjoying the tropes. Anyway, it's a absolute joy to watch. Do check it out. You have got to check it out. Strong recommendation there. And next on my list, I never finished the original Macross Frontier TV series, and a friend told me recently, while I was moaning about that was one of the series I meant to finish, but I kind of dropped it once it started to drag, and I heard the ending was a real disappointment. So I don't know if I want to finish this, but I really want to see what happens to Cheryl. And she was like, oh, just watch the movies. It's a perfectly acceptable substitution. I was like, okay. And I quite agree. I don't know how much the movies change the TV series because it has been so long since I've seen the TV series. But I thought that the TV series, that the movies, while the first movie had some really rough animation and some moments where they were cutting the action so close that it wasn't always clear when people were going from point A to point B. And that kind of made many of the action scenes lose momentum. The second movie was much better animated. In many respects, it also had much better concerts, which I think were actually more important to the movie than the actual fighting. And just cleaned up the storyline a lot, made it engrossing, made it interesting. I finally understood what the hell was going on, and I spent, I guess, out of the 4 hours of movies, 3 hours completely confused and just kind of along for the ride. It kind of all came together nicely. There's bits I would quibble with, but it's a solid pair of movies, and I think perfectly acceptable if you want to see Macross F but don't want to go through the whole through the ups and downs of the TV series.
Yeah, I'm in a similar boat. I watched the majority of the TV series and then stopped, and to the life of me, I can't recall anything I actually watched. I know I watched most of it.
I remember from the TV series how amazingly animated the first episode was. I remember how much of it echoed kind of the first episode of the first Macross, but I just remember this really promising start, this extreme high of a TV series that anime TV rarely gets to, and how it just dropped precipitously. In comparison. Anyway, moving on. I promised to be quick, so I'm going to go on ahead and talk about... I'm going to go on ahead and admit that I watched Nana Hall. I'm sorry, guys. You can kick me off the podcast. Nana Hall is kind of hugely influential in otaku circles in Japan, but in America, you never really hear of it. That's kind of one of the reasons I watched the movie, is I just wanted to know what it was about, but I was surprised how much I ended up enjoying it. The first movie was kind of a nice combination of action and really, really heightened, ridiculous melodrama that I ended up buying just because of how heightened it was. And it kind of came together really nicely, despite the really, really creepy parts, which I knew about going into, and were even creepier than I thought they were going to be.
What kind of creepy? What?
Pedophilia creepy.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, really. The transfer... You know how some magical girl shows, the transformation scenes are a little ecky?
Mm.
In Nana Hall, the movie, the transformation scenes are explicit. And... it just disgusted me. If I could just cut that part out, though, it would be a great movie. It would actually be a movie you could probably show your kids. Just that one part just is this taint on the rest of the a perfectly good movie.
But transformation scenes are always the best in Magical Girl shows. So
in some of them, and
no, but not obviously not in this one. So it's a shame.
Not in this one. It's a shame. But I was quite hyped, understandably, for the second movie, and I felt let down once I actually got around to seeing it. It's extremely long. It's 2.5 hours for an anime movie, which is unheard of as far as I know. They usually last an hour and a half, maybe 2 hours.
That's kind of, yeah, it's more like Ghibli length, isn't it, than
it is.
A normal animation.
Yeah. The and I think it suffers for the length. They're trying to compress a 26-episode TV series into a single movie. I think it kind of shows. I don't want to go down the full list of my problems with it. Just know that I thought it was problematic, but not because it was creepy. The creepiness kind of recurs, but it's not as bad, I thought, this time around. But the action just doesn't have as much oomph. The characters are not as interesting. There's a lot more characters this time around, which I think is part of the reason why the series just didn't have as much emotional impact, because it's trying to invest itself equally in this conglomeration of villains, of sympathetic villains, and none of them really stand out, and they're all kind of wishy-washy. They leave a wishy-washy impression, I guess is what I'm trying to say. And the action, which was just so crisp and so much fun to watch in the first movie, it wasn't as heightened as you would expect, considering that there's supposed to be this massive upgrade that they talk about midway through the movie that all the characters get. So this is supposed to be bigger and better and more badass. And it's not quite that. So Nanoha Movie the Second, mild disappointment, not bad enough that if you are a fan or curious, you shouldn't watch it. It's kind of a rental more than anything else. And I'm done.
Okay, so was that reanimated or was that new animation for the movie?
New animation. Oh, so thing, similar plot. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
There will be a third movie sometime in the next few years, and it will have an original plot because the third season of Nanoha is largely reviled.
What, because of the transformation scenes? Or?
No, everyone hated it for, I don't know why Nanoha Strikers isn't popular. But the fans don't like it, and I guess the people who own the property rights don't either.
Now, my impression of Nanoha is that it's liked by adult males who watched Sailor Moon and or Cardcaptor Sakura in the 90s,
mm-hmm.
and they wanted something to grow up with it. And also, they're all balding.
Yeah, that sounds like a fair description and a stereotype, but since I like Nanoha too, and I'm not balding yet.
You've broken the stereotype, Bradley. Hooray.
Good job, me.
Hooray for you and Nanoha.
it is definitely, it is not a magical girl show that can be watched by both little girls and older men like Pretty Cure. It's definitely for the older men set. Which, again, I think that's a shame, because if you just take out the creepy bits, you'd have a perfectly acceptable, fun-to-watch family movie with much better violence than most family movies. But it's all fantasy violence, so it's okay.
But at the same time, would anybody go and see that? Because Pretty Cure exists. And they make movies.
Yes.
So you might as well just make it for creepy old men and at least get an audience.
No, see, I think you can like it even if you're not a creepy old man, because the violence is that good. It probably has the best magical girl fantasy violence I've ever seen in that subset of a genre. And again, it also has this really heightened, ridiculous melodrama that I found quite engrossing. So there's that as its draw as well. I don't want to make it sound like the only reason to like Nanoha is if you just really want to see some magical girl panties. I'm trying to be fair here, Brian.
Okay, I'm trying to be unfair. What you watch?
I have been watching. Well, I've been reading as well. I started reading a manga called I Am a Hero, which is, was that on? Did we mention it last episode, or was it after we finished recording?
That was after we finished recording.
Busy. Something that popped up on a forum a while ago, and I did make a note of this title of this manga, I Am a Hero, and I forgot. I don't know where the piece of paper went, whatever. Anyway, I found it again. I've been reading that. It's basically this like depressing story about a manga artist who's kind of struggling to make his break as a famous manga artist, get his work published. And amidst all this, there's people turn into zombies. And I'm not as far into the zombie apocalypse, which is imminent. It's going to happen. There's going to be like big, you know, people, loads of people getting killed. But at the moment, it's kind of news reports of people getting bitten across Japan, stuff like that. And obviously, nobody thinks it's zombies because zombies aren't real. But it's really good. It's really dark. And the main character, he has conversations with this character in his head, and says, this is really weird at the minute, but I think it's going to pick up and it's going to be something I'm going to really like, hopefully. So I would advise to give it a read if you can. And secondly, after a little break, I don't know why I took a little break, but I've caught up with Attack on Titan, and I'm enjoying it. It kind of fell off, it went a little bit slow, and now it's kind of picking itself back up again, but I'm worried. Because although it's a positive that they're willing to kill people off, no spoilers obviously, but they're willing to kill people off and just do all sorts, whatever the hell they like with the characters, which sounds great because, you know, always be scared someone's going to get killed. I'm worried in case they just do it to a level where you no longer want the characters to live because you think, they're going to get killed off anyway. So I'm kind of skeptical at the moment where it's going to go. But it's still very good. It looks great. The animation's great.
As long as they don't kill off Sasha Blouse, I am okay with whatever they do.
See, well, anything could happen. That's what I'm worried about, where they just think, where no longer I care. No, sorry, the word I'm looking for is no longer do I want to put investment into the show because I'm expecting everybody to get killed off in a ridiculous, giant-eating way.
You know, I actually find the characters incredibly difficult to invest in because so many of them are fairly broad stereotypes that I've seen pretty much everywhere else. And I'm honestly not joking when I say I hope Sasha doesn't die. She's the only bright spot in that sense. She's kind of this nice mix of quirky and comic relief. And if the show doesn't have any comic relief, it'll be too much and it'll take itself too seriously. Potato-eating lesbian was the best thing that ever happened to this cartoon.
Well, I'm willing to stick with it, but I've heard a lot of people who've read the manga say literally nothing happens. Like, stuff happens, and then it doesn't get explained, and you get more questions, and there's no answers, basically. But we'll see. I kind of want to read it instead. I think I'll be able to get through it a lot quicker if I read it, but we'll see.
It's apparently been a huge success in Japan, and Blu-ray orders and so on. I'm glad it's a success, too. I'm liking the show, even though I have quite a negative opinion of the characters, but I suppose we'll talk more about that in a future episode.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah,
the comic was huge already, so it's not too surprising that it's been a big success.
That's all I've been doing. That's literally reading and watching. And obviously Game of Thrones, but I'm at the stage where I don't even talk about Game of Thrones anymore. Everyone should know that I watch it. And that it's great.
Is that right?
It is great. Beyond great. It's the best.
I remember when I was an English sophomore in a literature class, I was trying to persuade my fellow classmates that this book series called Song of Ice and Fire was fantastic and they should all read it. And now I get the last laugh because I bet all of them...
Oh, but that's the thing,
probably
don't
remember it either, but I'm taking that... hipster smug self-satisfaction that I, at least as a loser who was reading fantasy novels for years as a teenager, I got one thing right. One thing.
Yeah, there's a lot of people who have read it or kind of told people to read it and like, nah, I'm not reading a fantasy book.
It's fantasy. Why would I read that?
Yeah. Exactly. And then it's HBO release it and it's the best thing ever. But
now it's cool.
I just like good TV, so...
I'm not bitter at all.
I'm just kicking myself now that I didn't compare Slayers to Game of Thrones last week.
Do you think we could have done?
I think I could have got a rise out of you by doing so.
What, with me saying I don't know the characters enough? Is that what you...
No, I don't know why. I'm sure I could have thought something.
Oh, you could have found something.
I found something. I'm just kicking myself now. Okay, and now our final feature, weekly retro recap, which is Zatch Bell, episode 2.
Ooh, we managed episode 1.
Yes.
We barely managed episode 2.
Okay. In this episode of Gash Bell, he wants to do another Ally of Justice plan. And he has a bunch of new bag disguises, but settles on the one he had from the previous episode. As they're heading to school, they notice the river's frozen, which is apparently caused by a... I don't know if he's a hoodlum or a yakuza. I assume he's a hoodlum, because I'm not sure a yakuza would need to hold a bank up. But he's one of these purple silk shirt hoodlums, as opposed to a tracksuit hoodlum.
Yeah.
And he also has a demon who he used to freeze the river up. And later on, you see Susume, the girl from the first episode, who's gone to do her mother's banking at the bank, and walks in on said hoodlum holding up the bank. They see this reported on the news, and Gash convinces the guy whose name I've got to write down this week, the main character. Can you remember the main character's name?
Oh, it begins with a kick. Kiyomorius, I don't know.
Yes.
That's how great he is.
Convinces him that they should go and save her. He ums and ahs for an interminably long time, and then decides, yeah, I've got to be a man, I've got to be a shonen hero. Let's go and charge straight in without thinking. So they charge straight into the bank, literally. Mm. They smash through a window. He's got all these plans, which Gash runs straight through by just immediately giving themselves away. And eventually, when Gash is frozen, it ignites the emotion within him, which allows him to cast the second spell from the book, which allows Gash to explode out the ice and zap everybody with his lightning again. And he's hailed a hero by the entire town by blowing the front of the bank up. And when they get back home, they discover that Gash has become more powerful, because at the start of the episode, he was trying to take the TV to school with him, and it was too heavy for him to lift. But now I think he's lifting it one-handed, isn't he, by the
he's so strong.
End of the episode. And
the character's book, you can see further. Now the text was more red text.
Yes, that you can read the second spell in there.
Yeah, exciting.
There was, in the midst of all this, there was the same reaction shot used about three different times of our hero, his eyes popping out his head at something amazing happening. And my favourite visual gag, though, was right at the start of the TV show that Gash is watching and sort of behaving like a feral animal in front of, is that it's like a Kamen Rider show, but whereas a Kamen Rider has the head of an insect and the body of a man, this hero apparently had the head of a man and the body of an insect.
Oh, God, you're giving it too much credit. On paper, this show sounds great. It sounds great.
So, did you like it, Anthony?
It was just there. It was no better or worse than episode one, I don't think. I just don't know where it wants to go with itself. I know it's two episodes. It's early days, but not early enough for me. I've had enough of it. I'm ready to pack my Gash bag. I'm going to turn into a bag and walk away from this one, I think.
Yeah, I was of a similar opinion. I think I might prefer reading the comic, but at the same time, I have my shelves are filled to the brim with One Piece, so do I need to buy another shonen action series to read when One Piece does that job for me? But Bradley, you said you'd watched it as well.
I did. I think I got through about five episodes several weeks ago of this for my 2003 article. And yeah, my opinion seems to be, my feelings about the series at least seem to be in about the same place that both of you are in. It's perfectly watchable, occasionally enjoyable, just somehow not very involving. Even though there are many individual moments, I really liked the TV gag, for instance, that you talked about. I liked the way that Gash greets his new owner in the first episode, completely naked. because I have the sense of humor of a 12-year-old. But bits and pieces here and there, like, one of the things I like about Shonen Jump series is kind of the sense of momentum that the really good ones can carry for an extended period of time. And this series so far doesn't have any momentum five episodes into it. I think that's five episodes out of 150 or something. This ran for several years. I'm not sure if I was willing to make the time, I would be willing to see how long it takes to finally get to that happy place a few Shonen Jump series have been able to hit, you know, where you just take in episode after episode after episode after episode, you know, like an addict. I could see it happening. I just see glimmers of it at this point, you know?
Yeah, I should say this was a Shonen Sunday series, if I remember correctly. But yeah, and it's still weekly, so you would have expected that same pace.
Mm-hmm.
Good. To think it went on for so long. I mean, I'm sure it's great.
I mean, there's a clip which I've been shown multiple times, which is great. But again, that's a clip out of one episode.
Why is the clip great? Is it good animation?
It's funny animation, and it's a funny song, and it's a funny character, and it's the joke works on various levels. And we may discuss that character later on during the game.
Ooh, very good.
As there's some Zatch Bell references in the game. So I hope you know all your Zatch Bell facts.
Oh, man, I don't.
Couldn't even remember the main character's name.
That's not one of the questions.
I don't know. I don't know why he wears that little pendant. I imagine it's part of his uniform. It's what?
He's a demon.
So no, not Gash, the main character.
Oh.
Like on his school shirt, he's got this horrible...
The purple silk shirt guy had got his own medallion on as well, hadn't he?
Mm.
So...
Oh, it's like, oh, this was given to me by my grandfather who died a long time ago, and he was kind of mysterious and cranky. Probably. Something like that.
Good work. So, if we're not watching this next week, Anthony, what are we watching?
I've been building this one up for a while, because obviously I've looked through the list. We are going to watch Digigirl Pop Strawberry and Pop Mix Flavor.
I've seen this already.
Oh, great. I've not seen it, but it sounds great.
Were you trying to enact suffering on Brian and it just backfired on you?
No, because I think it'll be a laugh and it'll certainly cheer us up. It'll certainly cheer, I think, I hope.
So, you hope.
Next week, join us for Mr. Stain on Junk Alley Part 2.
I know how to pick them.
Oh,
I know how to pick them.
You do. No, I can't imagine. I can't see you defending this one. Anyway, we should deal with that next week.
Oh, right.
But there you go. Let's move on to our main topic for this week, which is the 15th Lupin the Third TV special from 2003, Operation Return the Treasures, directed by Jun Kawagoe. Who you may know from. He did the 2001 Cyborg 009 TV series, the 2007 Jeeg TV series, and the Mazinkaiser SKL OAVs. Written by Hiroshi Kashiwabara, who has written 11 other Lupin the Third specials and films. And animation director, animation supervisor, and character design by Satoshi Hirayama, who has done a whole load of TMS projects, including Roman, Glass Mask, and loads of Lupin. And the other animation director and character designer is Toshimitsu Kobayashi, who's done less Lupin, but he has done Zeta Gundam, Gundam... Is it Double Z or Double Zeta? I never know. Never had to say it out loud before in my life. Charles Counterattack, F91, more recently Cinderella Boy, another Monkey Punch series, and Spice and Wolf 2 as his favourite.
I just can't wait to finish season one, which I will never ever do.
Right, yeah.
Just saying.
Okay, before we get into the plot, did you enjoy this movie, guys?
Absolutely. This is probably my favourite Lupin special.
What about you, Anthony?
Yeah, I liked it. I liked it much more than the other Lupin one we watched that turned out meh, The Last Job.
The first? So, yeah. Oh, The Last Job. We also watched the
First Contact. Yeah.
First Contact, yeah.
Which was the one before this. Yeah, I like this one a lot as well, particularly for its use of location.
Mm-hmm.
I think it does a really good job with that. So, the story of this involves Lupin having to return a bunch of treasures.
Which, as Jigen points out, is actually harder than stealing the treasures in the first place.
Yes. So this thief, Mark Williams, has passed away, and he wants Lupin to return 6 treasures in 7 days in order for him to get hold of the Trick Diamond, which is this treasure of Mark's that he's after. Which is this diamond which absorbs light, apparently.
Mm-hmm.
And Jigen thinks it's worthless. Also, after the diamond is that good old-fashioned Hollywood villain, a member of the Russian mafia, called Rats. I can't remember what his Russian name is, but his nickname's Rats.
Everyone calls him Rats, so he's Rats.
He is. Who has an assassin on hire called Misha. And they're also after it. And so that leads them on a chase all around Europe as they deposit all these things, avoid getting killed. And eventually they end up with the Trick Diamond in Barcelona. And they learn his connection to... Where have I written it down? Sagrada Familia.
Yeah. Yep.
The still being built... it's not a cathedral, as the Wikipedia article continually points out as you're reading it. Not a cathedral.
Really? I didn't know that. So what do they call it then?
In English, it's the Basilica and Expiatory Church of the Holy Family. Is its translated English name, according to the Wikipedia page.
So, yeah. A cathedral?
Which is when they start making it 1882, and it's 131 years into building. Estimated completion time, according to the Wikipedia page, is 2026 to 2028.
Whoa.
Maybe I'll live to see it finished. I kind of hope so. It looks so good and special.
2026? Of course you'll be alive.
Well, you never know. Never know.
And Rats is also already annoyed at Lupin because the opening scenes feature Lupin stealing a whole load of money from Rats' casino.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, all while all this is going on, you've got Fujiko double-crossing people and Senigata turning up.
Everywhere.
It was a four-way cross. She outdid herself this episode.
It was pretty good. Pretty good going. So Rats is voiced by Koichi Yamadera, who was Spike Spiegel in Cowboy Bebop. And he is the current voice of Zenigata.
That's pretty awesome.
Oh, really? That's a nice... I like that.
Yeah, he also had a role in the Crisis in Tokyo special. I think he also had like a tiny bit part in another one. But also mixed up in this, we meet... It's Mark's niece, isn't it? Anita.
Mm-hmm.
That's right, yeah.
Who is voiced by the singer Reno... Who sang the Zatch Bell theme?
That is so strange.
It all comes together.
Because this was obviously which ones we choose for the recap is never, ever planned.
She sung a lot of theme tunes, so there's a good chance there's a pretty good chance that it could have been something we'd watched for
the magic.
Well, I mean, in all fairness, like, she's barely in this special at all, which is actually why she's the best Lupin girl.
She's a rare character who's told... Don't come with us, stay here.
And actually, she does!
She does! Characters just don't do that in fiction. Mark Williams, despite being dead, he gets a fair bit of screen time from various films, shows up. And he is voiced by Joji Yanami, and I've written to here he's the voice of assorted professors and doctors. When you look at his list, he has been so many professors and doctors. He's the professor who created Cutie Honey. He's the professor who created Mazinger Z. He's also the Dragon Ball narrator and Boyaki in Yataman. Yes, so how do you want to handle this? Piece by piece as we go through the film, or is anything?
Yeah, start up? With the Omen. Let's hammer the opening. Let's compare it to the last jobs.
The opening, I think the music tells you, why have I written Casio Heist rather than Casino Heist? That lowers the stakes greatly.
What?
I've missed a letter out in my notes. So it says Casio, it makes it sound like Lupin's going to steal a calculator. but no, there's a lot of James Bond... in the Gadgetry. Soundtrack for this. Movie.
Right.
And there's one huge obvious James Bond reference we'll get to later. But so as the casino heist, my favourite bit in this is, and this may be one of my favourite scenes in the entire movie, is the shot that Jigen makes with the sniper rifle when he's using the cigarette to know what way the wind's blowing and when the wind's calmed down.
Yes, yes. I love
so
that.
Pro. So pro.
And you also know what brand of Russian cigarettes he's smoking. This series has a lot of detail in it that it pays attention to. Mm. I say series, I mean movie.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
That's all right. I've done it plenty of times.
Oh, man. But anyway, yeah. It keeps that eye for detail, I think, throughout the movie and really enriches it. So just an additional observation there. That was probably my favorite tidbit as well, though I also liked how Lupin opened the case with, I think, frozen ice or something.
Yeah, so it's the good old science fiction liquid nitrogen, which
there we go.
Works exactly how you want it to work.
Then he rides the cases like a scooter.
Yeah, I was trying to remember whether 2003 was the height of the scooter craze in the UK. I know it was the early 2000s when those scooters...
I think it was maybe dying out in 2003.
Well, you're more likely to know because you're younger than me.
I never had a scooter. It was not for me. It was something I always thought, you know what, I'd kind of like one. Then I thought, nah, it's pointless.
This was like a scooter meets a Segway, though, because he had to stand up the entire time while driving it. It was a pretty bizarre machine. I wasn't sure if it was real or not.
Yeah, it's a weird thing, but it's... Yeah, scooters... Tried to bring it back with Lupin, but it didn't work. But yeah, I like it as an opening. I don't think it's as strong as The Last Jobs, obviously, because that was the best bit of The Last Job. But it's still... I know it's like totally different times and stuff like that, but, you know, I need something to compare it to. But it's still pretty good. It's funny. I love, you know, the whole freezing the camera. So they have, like, it doesn't look like he's actually breaking in. It looks like it's just an empty room. I always love seeing that happen in films anyway.
I love how Zenigata notices that the camera must be frozen with the fan that has the little flap that has stopped moving.
Mm.
Yeah, I think we're incompetent Zenigata mode in this movie, where he's more competent than the villains, but not as competent as Lupin.
Columbo Zenigata.
That's my favorite mode for Zenigata.
Yeah, he's not into Clouseau here. And then that leads to a chase and some water skiing.
Yes.
And some foreshadowing of the advantages of revolvers against automatic pistols.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the next scene we get is I think this is supposed to be in Tibet, but I couldn't really get
Tibet,
that.
Yes,
okay.
It's mentioned later.
Tibetan benefactor, I think he says on the bridge,
where all Goman's friends are gunned down by Misha.
Really harsh.
Really harsh.
And then we discover what Lupin and Jigen have been spending. Well, Lupin's been spending their ill-gotten gains on. Now, where is this taking place?
Well, is it in Russia still?
Yeah, I
thought
it was in Germany.
It's in the Black Forest of Germany. That was my guess. Because we know that Anita is German. Beyond that, it doesn't give us much detail.
Yeah, because the guy's name was Mark Williams, I was like, oh, it must be in the UK. But then
Mark Williams is apparently Spanish. So, I love Misha. There are very, very few compelling Lupin villains. And I think she's one of the few who kind of gets to that elite ranks. And anytime there's a compelling Lupin villains, Lupin specials benefit immensely from it.
Mm-hmm.
She is an extremely competent assassin. This is normally in Lupin specials, like Lupin is running circles around everyone else. And in this one, Misha is the primary reason why it is so hard for them to get anything done. On top of Zenigata actually being smart this time around. I mean, I also find her just an interesting tragic hero, but I suppose we'll get to that in a minute.
Yeah, and it's a recurring thing in the specials of super competent female assassin who has to face off against Goemon.
Yeah, but she's much better than the rest of them.
That's true, yeah. She's a better design.
Better design. She gets much better moments, I would say. There's a great one we'll get to in a minute where she's facing off against Goemon. I like the budding rivalry between her and Goemon. I love her voice actress, Rei Igarashi, who I don't think you mentioned earlier.
No, I didn't.
She gives a great voice for her, which is very, very sultry, very deep, kind of a almost masculine voice.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, like I have a soft spot for women with short hair who are badasses, so what can I say?
Yes, so what Lupin has spent his money on is it a biplane? It's
some rickety
thing, and Jigen is not impressed.
No, but he's very relaxed about the whole thing.
I think he has come to accept with a Zen-like certainty that being with Lupin means shit like this is just going to happen, and you go for the ride, you know?
Yeah, it's the repeating scene in the comic and in the early TV series of him drinking in a hotel room, having to listen to Lupin explain a ridiculous plan. Which pretty much sums up his entire attitude. We get some good bits on that in the later. But yeah, so, because at first when it's about to crash, I thought, oh, it's been sabotaged. But no, it was a piece of junk.
It's just a bad plane.
He has just broken this aeroplane he bought.
The best part about it is that he spent half of their money on it for a shitty plane. And once the plane crashed, they lost all their money. So yeah. If he had just spent all of their money on a good plane, none of this would have happened.
Because they were heading to Mark's. Were they heading to the funeral, or were they just going to go and steal the jewel?
My sense is, because it seems like Mark and Lupin were actual friends, he was going to go to the funeral and then go and steal his treasure after he was dead.
Yeah. So yeah, everyone pours out the funeral to see what's going on there, hanging out this tree.
Mm-hmm.
And that's
they
when we
literally crashed the party.
Yes, I'd written gate crashing the funeral here. And that's when we first meet Anita, and we see Fujiko's there in disguise as a nun.
I didn't recognize Fujiko.
I was going to say
that.
Until
she said
as well,
Fujiko,
yeah.
I completely went over my head.
Yes, yeah,
it's a good disguise.
So then they case the joint a bit later on to try and find this jewel, and you see all the stuff that Mark's nicked over time, and this is where he explains that he's after the trick diamond, to which point, immediately after hearing this, Jigen says, I quit. And starts walking off, and then tries to convince him, and then, no, he's going to quit again.
This is one of those scenes that kind of showcase how the voice actors for Lupin are such veterans and just play off each other so well.
Yeah. Because
they have been doing this for years, and they know each other, and they know their timing so well. It's so well done. I loved that bit. I also like that Mark Williams apparently is a specialist thief with a different sensibilities in what he likes to steal than Lupin does. He likes to steal kind of useless things, I guess, is what they're described at. He steals things like the bleachers where a fan caught Babe Ruth's 60th home run in a season.
Yeah, they're all sort of nostalgic items, aren't they?
Yeah, nostalgic. Like, not exactly valuable, just weird and interesting stuff.
Yeah.
But some of it is straight up Carmen Sandiego shit.
But having discovered the jewel's not there, but what is there is Zenigata.
And Fujiko. Fujiko also fills him in on... Did we get to that part yet?
No, we don't get to that part now. Cause
you're right. I'm compressing things.
Yeah, this is why I had to write loads.
It's confusing.
Because the amount of times they get put in jail in this film, it would get very confusing.
But that, it pays off later, doesn't it?
It does, yeah. This is the first time they get put in jail.
So they haven't seen the video until they've been put in jail?
No.
Right.
Ah, right. I thought, right.
Because they don't know Fujiko's there yet. It's like when she shows up at the jail as Zenigata
gets
drunk.
Yes, that's correct, yeah.
And hands them bread with C4 and a detonator in it.
And how they cooked that, I don't know.
Risky business, putting that in the oven.
My favourite bit of this start is the establishing shot of the jail. You see a cat sleeping on a police car. And then as they're escaping, you see back outside the cat sort of stretching. And then there's an explosion and he runs off the screen.
Which is a recurring thing with all the jailbreaks.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Which is nice. So I like seeing animals get scared. Like that, anyway. That sounds very mean, but it's funny seeing a cat jump off a police car.
I like how they always get locked up in really shoddy prisons that you only need like a little bit of C4 and then you blow the whole thing up.
Yeah. Yeah, because while I thought they were in England at this point, the first time when I was watching it, I thought, I mean, this even probably goes for Germany as well, is that all the vehicles in the area they're out seem to be from the 1950s or the early 1960s. They seem really old. There's a few things where the timing of when this has actually taken place seems odd. I think later on when the mobile phone turns up, I was like, this is 2003. Are the people animating this not seen a mobile phone recently? Yeah, because it reminded me of the British TV programme Heartbeat while they were running around the countryside in all these old cars.
I love that too.
Yes, so then they've been broken out by Fujiko and then they watch the film of Mark telling them that if they want the trick diamond, they need to return 6 treasures in 7 days, which are La Bocca della Verita, making its second appearance in this podcast in recent weeks.
Yeah. So what else, when else did that pop up again?
That came up in JoJo's.
That's right, because I remember my little story about it, which I'm not telling you.
You said there was one in a shopping centre or something.
Yeah. See, I thought I actually dreamt discussing that last time. Right. When this popped up, I was like, this is some weird deja vu.
It was a very long episode. You might have nodded off at some point. So. It was sleep casting. There's a coffee maker from the first place to sell coffee in the Plaza San Marco.
More Carmen Sandiego shit.
I looked that up. That is true. That was the first place.
I was going to ask, was that like a big deal?
Yeah.
It's a weird one.
Now, whether it looks like that one they show you, I don't know.
That looked like a genie's lamp.
This special will send you to Wikipedia.
Yeah. Oh, that was the good bit in the Maromi-san episode 4 when you says when the character says, if you want to know more, look it up.
Yes.
Then there's the hot speed boat / hovercraft gondola from the movie Moonraker. Mm-hmm. Can-can dresses from the Moulin Rouge. A custom-made car for the king of a Middle East country.
Mm-hmm. Which was that real as well?
Apparently it's based on the Mercedes-Benz 300 SLR. They did have a special car mecha designer, a guest mecha designer, just for that car on this show. Wow. And the statue of the Little Mermaid in Copenhagen.
Interesting bunch of things. Which was your favourite deliverance? Which of your of his returns? Which was your...
We'll get to them. But I liked the La Bocca della Verita,
yeah.
The Moulin Rouge, and the delivering the car.
They're all pretty good.
They're all really colourful.
Yeah.
Yeah, those are probably my favorites as well. God damn it, we are waist deep in the hot tub of consensus here.
Yes.
I'm going to have to flip it. I'm going to flip the anger switch.
Controversial opinions.
I need to complain about something.
All right, go for it, Anthony.
I can't. Not yet. I'll think of something. Rats is crap. He's a crap villain. But I'll get to him.
Okay. While they're watching this film, though, they get attacked by the Mafia. You do a very poor job of killing them. Because they're alive at the end of the attack.
Fujiko heroically diverts their attention too, which I thought was uncharacteristic of her. But
that is true.
She is unusually good in this special.
Yeah, she gets a bit of gunfighting in there.
She does. She is. She's very competent. Sometimes in a not Fujiko-like way. But it seems close to her character. She's supposed to be, after all, a really experienced thief in her own right.
Yeah.
And some specials forget that. This one didn't.
And so that takes us to Rome, where we get the La Bocca della Verita return, which is ridiculous.
But it's hilarious.
It is funny, but...
Oh, my God.
Best part of the show? Possibly.
I'm gonna throw that one out there as well. It's had me creased. I was simply bent over with laughter.
Okay, well, Anthony, as you're so, you've been saying, amused by it, so you can explain to the
audience. It's great.
What happens?
Well, I didn't actually know the story behind... What's it called again? I'm not very good with pronunciations.
The Mouth of Truth. If you
Yes, the Mouth of Truth. Basically, allegedly, if you put your hand in, if you tell a lie, it will bite your hand or your hand will be stuck, which Lupin kind of fools all the tourists into thinking his hand is stuck. And then he rolls down the street in this the most humorous fashion of someone grasping a large stone disc could possibly do. And he rolls down the street, past everyone, past down this little alleyway, into the back of Jigen's van. And then he replaces it with the... Well, sorry, he then latches onto the real Mouth of Truth and rolls back up the street, past all the tourists, and jumps back into position.
Now, I want to make clear to our listening audience how exactly he does it, because while Anthony's recap is good, it doesn't quite capture the silliness of what he does. You know how you can roll a quarter on its side down a flat plane, okay? So the Mouth of Truth is rolling like that, like a giant quarter. And because Lupin's hand is stuck in the mouth, in the middle of this giant stone quarter, Lupin rolls with it down the stairs, down several streets, and right into a car that Jigen, who immediately caught on to Lupin's plan without having to be told anything, had prepared for him. And then the best part is, the way that Lupin returns the Mouth of Truth is the exact same thing in reverse. He didn't do the smart thing and rolled it, you know, like a normal person would. Oh, no. He had to pretend that he had been rolling, stuck to this the entire time. It was great.
It's very clever. In terms of comedy, it's very, very clever.
And to prove that they've done this, they have to take a photo with a digital camera, which then uploads the photo to Fujiko's computer. Now, I didn't check this. I was wondering just now whether this was a clever bit of product placement, whether there was a digital camera which uploaded photos wirelessly launched around this time, or whether they were. Because they do go on a bit about how great this digital camera is.
It is a pretty good camera.
And it apparently can also contain secret messages, but we'll get to that in a minute.
And then we get the obligatory Fujiko double cross as she's agreeing to sell the trick diamond to Rats.
Double cross number one. It gets better.
And then we can move to Venice, where Goemon shows up and is framed by Lupin in a fairly mean-spirited way.
He's very mean. Very mean.
As he basically gets given the coffee maker and told that this cafe like you to bring your own coffee makers in and they'll make it using that.
Oh, that was such a great prank. I'm surprised Goemon didn't bite Lupin's head off afterwards, but I guess they got so caught up in everything else that was happening that he didn't really have time to enact revenge on him.
No, and it wasn't like Lupin had killed his mates.
Yeah.
Shot him.
Yeah. He had more important things to worry about. No. Is this how like oblivious he is when the police start turning up? He just doesn't really know why. It's great.
And is this where he tries to make a haiku and doesn't quite reach the?
No, that's later
on. Okay,
that's later on. That was pretty funny too.
And then we go where Fujiko and Rats are meeting up in Paris, and we learn some more about the history of the trick diamond and how it's related to the Tunguska impact.
Pure info drop there. And it also tells you, look, it's probably an alien artifact. And since this is Lupin, you know it's actually an alien artifact.
Ooh, I don't like aliens.
You got to take that in Lupin, though.
Really?
It is a divisive thing, but it is something which is definitely part of its DNA, along with time machines and all sorts of other wacky stuff. And then while we're in Venice, they decide to drop off the gondola, which leads to a gondola chase, which I was a little disappointed they didn't make use of the hovercraft aspect that it had from the movie.
Now, in this chase, they're being chased by the mob.
Yeah.
Goemon gets mixed in. And I mentioned earlier that there was one particular moment where I really liked Misha. This was the moment. There's one part where Goemon, because he's Goemon, cuts their helicopter in half. The helicopter explodes, but Misha is still on the
ball. This isn't here, though.
Oh, this isn't?
No, this is a little... Shoot. That's later on. That's in Germany.
Oh, my goodness. Wow. I keep stepping all over this. Wow.
It's not as hard to follow as it sounds.
It's just hard to recap.
Now, here they all get arrested by Zenigata again.
Okay.
Basically, Zenigata arrests them all after they get away from the Mafia. All three of them are in jail this time, and Lupin lays it on thick to Zenigata.
This is sad.
About how he's turned over a new leaf, and he's going to start returning stolen items back to their original owners. Zenigata buys it hook, line, and sinker until they break out of jail again.
Yes.
Yeah, that's another one of those scenes where it's the chemistry between the voice actors really help. Oh, there's some nice shots as well, I think. There's nice shots all the way through. There's some stuff in this bit, I think, where it's like half of Lupin's face on one side of the screen and Zenigata reacting to it on the other.
It's very well storyboarded, very well composed. The whole series, movie.
Yeah.
In a series.
I'm used to just talking about series. It's just force of habit.
Yeah, and I don't know why. I don't know if it's a thing with TMS, but I couldn't, or whether it's just a thing with these specials that I couldn't find who had storyboarded it. So whether that's down on the animation directors or on the director, I'm not sure. Mm. But looking both on Wikipedia and on Anime News Network, there's no one with a nice, simple storyboard credit. I agree. There was a lot of nice storyboarding in this one, particularly more than usual.
Yeah. Especially compared to another page.
I've not watched that yet, so.
Oh, the animation is complete shit. I'm sorry.
All I did was scroll through and I was like, oh, there's somebody who looks like they belong in a Detective Conan thing.
It's not even the aesthetics. I was willing to adjust to the aesthetics. It just looks so bad. Anyway.
And then Rats gives Misha orders not to assassinate Lupin, as he's figured out that the only person who can get this trick diamond is Lupin, so if he wants it, he can't have her running around trying to kill him. That does not seem to stick, though.
No, she's going to do her own thing, even though she clearly is deeply in love with Rats.
And so it's to France, where we have some unconvincing cross-dressing.
It looks great!
As long as you look at them from behind, it's pretty good cross-dressing.
Well, I'm sure they're not like stuffed breasts. They have real cleavages. I guarantee. I was like, whoa!
It's more impressive how they get Zenigata apparently out of his clothes later on and then into the can-can dress.
I haven't thought of it as deep as that. But...
And you wonder, like, why did they hide that particular way where there were dresses behind the real dresses, and that obviously looks wrong, and you wonder, why are they doing it? No! It's so they can put Zenigata in a dress. That was the whole plan.
And then they take the car, and it's fun on the Autobahn.
Oh, yeah.
As they make a joke about that, because Goemon doesn't know why everyone's driving so fast. And here's where you get the helicopter. And here's where you get some really great chase sequence. I think this is the best chase in the movie. Yeah, probably the best action sequence in the movie, I think.
Far and away. The aughts, you know, I don't think they get very good chase sequences, every Lupin special, I guess, has to have one. This is one of the few that are really good. Oh, I was going to describe it. You caught me midway.
Yes.
Last time. Okay, so I'll try and start over, I suppose. So, like, they're being chased by a helicopter by the Mafia. And Goemon, because he's Goemon, in this great sequence where you kind of forgot that he was in the chase for a little while because he was off camera and everything else is so exciting.
Yeah, because the chase had slowed down and they were stuck in the traffic jam.
Right.
They were stuck in the traffic jam. The helicopter reappears and you're like, oh, where's Goemon? And then as he's going by, he's standing on top of a street light.
Yep. And he jumps down and cuts the helicopter in half. And as the helicopter explodes, there's this large smoke that kind of envelops everything, obviously. And Misha, who is apparently still on the ball this entire time, jumps out of it, comes out of the smoke in this great composition where she is pointing the sniper rifle down towards the ground, towards Goemon, just ready to immediately shoot him from the get-go. She looks so badass in that particular sequence. And I was like, yes, you are a great villain once I saw that particular scene. That is what made me go, you are pretty great. But yeah, it's a really entertaining chase sequence. And I do like the part where they're caught in a traffic jam after escaping the helicopter, because the car apparently goes 320 miles per hour and a helicopter can only go like 298.
Yeah, so Jigen jumps out of the car to get it out and go him on. And meanwhile, Lupin goes and returns the Mercedes by driving it straight into the building where it came from.
Slipping and like crashing into the other one.
That was my favorite detail. And I guess the real car is so good, it doesn't even take a scratch from that.
So that ends up with Jigen being captured, Goemon bleeding, and Lupin's still free, though, to deliver the final item, the Little Mermaid. Finding Goemon is Anita, who works as an architect. Her boss appears to be Magnum, who's disappointed in her. She doesn't seem to have any heart in the design she's doing.
You know, there's another reason I just thought of why Anita is probably the best Lupin girl. And it's because she doesn't show up until 40 minutes into the special, when she kind of has to if you're going to have one. Normally, they're in there in like the first 10 minutes, and they don't really do anything. They have like, they'll normally, most Lupin girls will have like 10 minutes of action in an hour and a half movie. So the moments that you have to, I don't know if you, it's fair to say, put up with. I guess I'm just making another joke about how Anita is good once again because she doesn't really do anything.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, then we go to the plane where Fujiko is setting up crime auctions. Apparently there's some sort of underground eBay where you can auction off
stolen goods. Let's keep track of the crosses here. So she double-crossed Lupin by dealing with rats, and now she's triple-crossing Lupin and rats by auctioning off the trick diamond. But don't worry, because she is a master at being a thief, she is going to quadruple cross.
But we see on the back of the plane is a guy we've not seen from and since the... Well, he used to have been a bit earlier on, but not seen much of him. It's Rats' butler.
Mm-hmm.
Tokarov, isn't he? Tokarev.
Is that the guy with the white moustache? Yes. And, yeah.
The guy who looks like a Monkey Punch old man.
No, he's aged very gracefully.
Yes, he's in early staging of Monkey Punch aging.
And a badass.
Yes. And then back to Copenhagen, where Lupin delivers the Little Mermaid and then discovers hiding underneath the fake Little Mermaid is Senigard.
How does he know?
He's far too pleased. Well, that's what Lupin asks. How long have you been hiding it there?
What kills me about that is when Lupin was installing the real Little Mermaid, I thought, wow, that was way too easy to take the old Little Mermaid off. Surely, oh, that's why. Zenigata was hiding under there.
And he's really, really, really pleased that he's caught him again. And then Lupin's in jail again, and we get an exploding tooth, a falling wall, a nod to Steamboat Bill Jr. from Buster Keaton, except the gag is that the window falls around Lupin, but the wall just falls on top of Senigata.
Genius. And that's a pretty good gag by itself, yeah. But what really sells it is up until this point, in every exploding jail scene, the window went through Senigata. And the reason he doesn't move is because he looks at Lupin as the wall is falling, and he's like, yeah. Ha! I got this. I've seen this before. Don't worry, I'm lucky. You're screwed. Nope.
Genius.
Then Fujiko has gone to the lawyers. Now, this is the bit where my notes don't relay how confusing this bit is. Now, I know there's a crazy safe, but what is in the safe?
I think the... What is in that safe?
It's that thing they load up on the computer.
Oh, yes, it's a USB flash drive.
Okay, and the video flash drive of Mark is supposed Williams. To have the location of the trick diamond. Or that... it's assumed that it does.
It's a little game. It's a little DVD-based menu game.
Yes, because Tuckerell breaks in, steals the contents. Meanwhile, Lupin's hitchhiking to Berlin, where he finds Mark's last message hidden on the camera, telling him that he couldn't trust Fujiko at all, and so therefore he should go to this location in order to find where the stone actually is.
So, if I understand this correctly, then Lupin didn't actually need to return any of the treasures. He just needed to find the secret message, and then he would have known exactly what to do.
He could have found the secret message, or he could have returned the treasures, as we learn now when we go back to rats and what Tokarev stolen. Because there's another film from Mark asking a question that only Lupin would know the answer to. It's a multiple choice question about what they stole from Donald Trump.
So was it money? Was it gold, or was it toilet paper? And the butler guessed wrong. The correct answer is toilet paper.
they had a race to see who could steal Donald Trump's toilet paper first. And apparently Mark won. Yes, and the butler got a bonk on the head, a cartoon bonk on the head for his trouble. Which was good, because you heard the sound effect off screen, and then...
Yes, and then you see it.
See the little lump on his head. Then we get Jigen versus Hollywood Goons Part 1, where he's tied to a chair, being interrogated, demanding to know where Lupin is. Mm-hmm. And we find out where Lupin is as a frozen Lupin drops out of the bottom of an aeroplane.
That's great.
And he catches up with Anita and discovers Goemon's there. And everything comes together. They find the Trickstone in a teddy bear. Then it's Tokarev's turn to be a Hollywood goon, which really annoys Jigen, but then Jigen manages to escape.
Now, isn't Jigen annoyed because his name is Tokarev, but he uses a different gun than Tokarev?
That is correct, yes. And because Tokarev is a villain doing the same complaint that Lupin was doing at the start of the film, saying, you should use an automatic.
Mm-hmm.
Not an old-fashioned revolver like you do, old man. And then to Spain, as we hit the finale, and photo-referencing up the yin-yang. I think the photo-referencing all throughout the Spanish bit works quite well, because the Sagrada Familia is such a weird-looking building.
It is.
It doesn't look out of place in a cartoon or a comic. It's, I think when you put those sort of photos, I mean, it's not straight photos. There's some straight photos in the ending credits, but I think they've done something to them in the cartoon.
They make it look eerie.
Yeah.
Kind of unsettling. Some of it is like there's a fog that just covers the basilica. It doesn't creep into the rest of the town. Though it also helps that the town looks very convincing, very European.
Yeah.
It's a really good fit.
All the way through, they've been pretty good with doing good establishing shots to say, this is the European town, or this is the country you're in now.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I've got a criticism to make.
Have you?
Yes. No, nothing in regards to like, the photographs or anything like that.
Oh.
Just after the deliverance, basically once Jigen is captured, I think the film totally loses steam. And I was really disappointed. I think they really start dodging around the finale massively, which it's such a shame. I think they really start drawing it out. It's far too long at this point. That is my criticism. My only criticism, I think. Yeah. Do you not agree? I think it's not like a big, big negative to think like, oh, I'd never watch this because of that. But I think after such a good start, pretty solid throughout, like, you know, all the deliverance of all the treasure, just suddenly just lose its steam and kind of you know, just to build up to the finale, which makes sense. Obviously, they've got to do it, but I think they do it in a way that could have been sped up a little bit.
Yeah, there's a bit more exposition than you'd expect this late into the film.
Definitely.
You've got a bit at Anita's house about the relationship between Mark and her mother, and then you've got the bit in Spain with the guy who owns the bar being told to...
I think he was another Spanish person named, like, Howard or something.
Yeah, I can't remember what the guy's name was, but...
See, it's all very needless.
I don't know. It does give kind of the necessary background for Anita. It's very info-dumpish, yes, and after a lot of extended sequences that are just basically action and no explanation, it does kind of suck that we get this extended period where everything, the background of the basilica is explained to us, the background of the characters who live in the town, and the importance of Gaudi and the Knott Cathedral that he's building. I find the information handy, but yeah, I could see why someone would go, why? We've been so good for so long. Why dump all this on us? Yeah. Why would you do this?
But it's a travelogue. It's to, there you go, when you're in Japan, thousands of miles away from Spain. It's like a chance to go around Live Europe. Spain. Yeah, go around Europe with your favourite cartoon characters. Yeah, so we also learn that there's various other criminals in town to buy this diamond. And then are we going to get into your fourth double cross, your fourth cross here?
Yes, it is the rare quadruple cross. Because not only, let's recap here, because it gets confusing, I understand. So not only does Fujiko double-cross Lupin by dealing with rats, and then triple-crosses rats by trying to sell the trick diamond in an underground eBay, she quadruple-crosses everybody by taking the minimum bid of like $50 million and running away with the money.
The master plan.
That was the master plan. And she pisses off everyone.
You'd think with their reputations that the rest of the criminal community would have learned by now.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so then it's kind of works into a race to get the diamond and insert it in. I'm not sure what Rats is doing at this point.
No, he's just...
It's like he seems to be wanting to race to put it in the Sagrada Familia himself.
Yes, because there's supposed to be a treasure that shows
that's it. Yes.
They don't know what they're going to achieve.
They don't know what the treasure is, but they just know it's valuable.
Okay, and then we get another... what I think was a James Bond reference in that Rats has got a golden gun. Which doesn't
there's that.
Because I looked that up and Scaramanga was Catalan. He was from that area.
Now, I don't know if this is another James Bond reference, but I think the most important part of – well, one of the really important parts of this final sequence is that the trick diamond is hidden in an American football, which is thrown around and tossed around all around the Knott Cathedral. And it's fun to watch the bouncing ball. They do a really good job with that.
Now, do they explicitly say it's an American football? Because I thought it might have been a rugby ball.
It might have been. It might have been. It looks so similar to me, at least. Someone who's never watched rugby.
Well, they're basically the same shape.
Yeah, they are.
But I was thinking the white colour and the fact they're in Europe, it might have been more like to have been a rugby ball.
Yeah, that makes more sense. But then again, Mark Williams is from Spain, so what do I know?
That is true. yeah, so everyone gets to face off against their chosen villain from the movie.
Yes.
Jigen against Tokarev, Goemon against Misha.
Yes.
Lupin and Fujiko against Rats.
Again, we just don't see enough of this in other Lupin specials where they build up the villains and you finally get that climactic fight. It's just, usually the fights are either kind of underwhelming or the villains are underwhelming. Here, it just all works. It all works so well.
Then, yes, so they insert the trick diamond, and then what happens? I've written, is it a giant space organ?
It's alien technology. Let's just leave it at that.
It basically, when you insert this diamond into Sagrada Familia, it plays music and then projects the missing parts of the building as some sort of laser light show. Mm-hmm. And also steam emerges from the weird turtle bottom parts of the columns.
It's important to mention as well, it's got to be inserted at this point in time.
Yes.
Exactly. Because that's why it was counted down 7 days for the 6 treasures, because it needed to be finished off at this point in time. So, yeah. I don't know what it is. Does it make a big... Is it what it's going to look like when it's finished? I don't know.
Yes, it is, because there's a model. He made a model beforehand.
Right.
Obviously, so they knew what they were aiming for. They weren't just improv building.
Ah, right. Got you.
That should be the new Olympic sport to replace wrestling.
Improv building.
Yes. There we go. We found it. Good job, Dynamite in the Brain.
And of course, the final thing is that the light show that Mark has orchestrated by sending Lupin after this treasure has reignited Anita's love of architecture.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't pick up on that.
That was the true treasure.
Oh, God. I really didn't pick up on that.
My favourite bit with Anita, though, is earlier on when she's going to look at the Sagrada Familia and that guy's hitting on her. And then she just walks off.
Yes,
I thought that was going to end up being like Lupin in a disguise or something. I'm sure he's meant to be somewhere at that point in time, so it couldn't have been him, but you never know with these specials, do you?
And then they send her off on a train, Lupin waving to her like a creepy uncle.
Oh, God.
And at best, she's mildly affectionate of him at the end of it. But yeah, I honestly do like Anita. As much as I joke about it, you're right that she's an actual strong female character type in a role that is normally reserved for the direct opposite of that.
Yes.
She's very realistic.
Yes, I think that's the best thing
should do.
Yes, she's very grounded.
It's now time to play Guess the European.
Right. All right.
I'm going to give you a character from an anime show, and you're going to tell me what European nationality they have.
Oh, my God. This is bad, because some of my geography, I might be throwing countries out there that
don't
okay,
exist.
But see, you actually live in Europe, and I'm from America. We haven't been at war with Europe in hundreds of years, so we don't remember any of the countries that are in your continent.
I've got this.
Okay, right. Bradley, start you off. Okay. Sherry Belmont from Zatch Bell. What nationality is she?
The name sounds French, so that's what I'll go with.
You are correct. It is French.
Woo-hoo! Wow.
1 point. Okay, Anthony.
Yes.
Paul Behoven from G Gundam. Paul Behoven.
Is he Dutch?
He is Dutch, yes.
Yeah.
Wow. I wouldn't have guessed that.
I imagine it's supposed to be a pun on Paul Behoven.
That's exactly why I thought that.
The director. Okay, Bradley. Rita from Tomorrow's Nadja. The little mute girl.
Oh, my. I'm going to guess English because Tomorrow's Nadja is set in England.
Incorrect. Anthony, do you want to steal it?
Oh, goodness, I was going to say England. let's think. Is she French?
No, she was Italian.
No, when does that get mentioned?
Well, not it hadn't got mentioned as far as we've got it.
Oh, right, okay. Mm.
Okay, this is the character from Zatch Bell, who many moons ago people were always one person in particular was always trying to send me YouTube videos of. Parco Fulgor from Zatch Bell. He's the guy with the song about breasts.
Is this for me or
Bradley? This is for you, Anthony.
Ah, right. Can you say his name again? I'll try and...
Parco Fulgor.
And he sings a song about breasts.
Yes, he's a famous actor in the country he comes from.
Spanish?
Take that, Family Guy creator.
He's not Spanish. And Bradley, chance to steal.
Okay, so Italian?
You are correct.
Wow, you know them swarthy Italians. They love their titties.
Also, he kind of looks like a Gona Guy character. He looks, and he's like dressed in 70s gear. So I think it's the the joke is related to the popularity of Go Nagai stuff in Italy. Mm. Works on many levels. Okay, Bradley. Lyserg Dithal from Shaman King.
And it's from a country
in Europe.
That actually exists in Europe.
Yeah, those words aren't from any country which exists in Europe.
Can you? And I was going to ask you to give me the name again, but I realize there's no point.
Lyserg Dithal. It's a pun on the LSD.
Oh, it's a pun on LSD. What European country really likes LSD? I'm going to say Germany.
Incorrect, Anthony. Chance to steal. Lyserg Dithal, the most annoying character in Shaman King.
Swedish?
No, he's British.
Oh, damn it.
How popular is LSD in Britain?
I have no idea.
Okay,
asking
Anthony.
The wrong people.
Here's one for you.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Johann Faust the Eighth from Shaman King.
Right, this is going to be a trick. I'm going to say German.
You're correct.
Oh, yes!
Oh!
I was nearly fooled into going the opposite way and going somewhere way, way off.
Yeah, because you know Brian likes to do that.
I do. Okay, Bradley.
Yes.
Cyborg 003 from Cyborg 009.
Oh! I don't even remember what he looks like. It's been so long. Can I get a hint? Is it the black dude?
It's not, no. I think he's from generically Africa.
Is it the guy with the hawk nose?
It's not, no. He's from New York.
Well, I guess I'm gradually eliminating what countries they're not from. But of course, none of those are European. Gosh. All right. I'm going to guess what is the most popular European country in Japan. Thank you, Rosa Versailles. France.
You're correct. She is French.
Oh, well done.
Oh, thank you, Ozma Desai.
Okay, Anthony.
Yes.
Cyborg 004 from Cyborg 009.
See, I want to say Scottish. I don't know. I'm going to say Scottish.
Oh, I know which. I think I know this one.
From Scotland.
He's not from Scotland, no. Bradley, you want to steal it?
Okay, I think this is a nationality and not a country, but I believe he's Belgium?
No, he's German.
Oh. He's the cook, right?
No, he's the German one. The cook's Chinese.
Oh, the mole who is also the cook?
Yes.
He's Chinese? Oh, okay, then I was thinking of the wrong guy. I don't know, I thought of him and then I thought of waffles and then I thought must be Belgium, right?
Okay, well, you're still in the lead, Bradley. Last one for you.
Okay.
So, the Major from Helsing.
German.
You're
right?
Correct, yes.
Okay. I had a moment where I was trying to remember who the Major was, and then, obviously, there
yes.
it is.
It was like he was the only character I could pick from Helsing who didn't have a German surname. Okay. And last one, chance to, well, at least go home with some pride, Anthony.
Looking to some prizes? I was going to say, ooh.
Vega from Street Fighter.
Oh, he's Spanish.
Yes, correct.
Easy peasy.
4-3 to Bradley. And that's how you play Guess the European. Woo-hoo. Okay, Bradley, anything you want to plug before we shut down this episode?
Well, a couple things. First of all, probably, well... In the near future, the golden anniversary of Anime Blog, which has been publishing articles from various writers, including Brian, one for each year, will soon have my article on 2003 up. At this point that we are recording the podcast, it is not written, but if Jeff will let me get away with it, it will probably be a monster in terms of length because, holy cow, there was a lot happening in 2003. on top of that, I'm blogging again. As of right now, I have up on the blog my thoughts on half of the shows that I'm watching at the moment from spring 2013. By the time this episode is out, I should have the second half of my list and hopefully some other observations and reviews, because now that school's out, even though I'm still taking some summer classes and going to work, I find myself with a little bit more time on my hands. So hopefully I'll be a little more active in that respect.
Good, good. How about you, Anthony?
I'm just on Twitter as normal, and ask you, but there's also a big thing going on, which I've just been confirmed for, and that is at London Expo, I'm going to be casting the League of Legends tournament for the full weekend.
Will that be available to see online as well as
At the moment, there is plans for it to be completely streamed, so once I find out a link, it will be around. So, yeah. But if you're at MCM Expo, come along.
You have the voice for it. Your voice sometimes reminds me of Apollo. Do you know who he is?
Oh, the he does StarCraft, doesn't he?
Yeah, StarCraft 2 caster. Yeah, also does great tutorial videos. Yeah, he's with the Good Studio.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I'm going to be casting. It's going to be hype.
Is that all 3 days?
It's going to be all 3 days.
Good luck.
Yeah.
Room temperature water, Anthony. Room temperature water.
Why room temperature?
Because cold water makes your throat close up.
Oh, really?
When you're speaking, probably you want room temperature water, not cold water.
That is good advice.
Add some
and what?
Lemon.
Lemon. Good advice. I'll note this down.
Something I would do is, back when I was acting in like high school and middle school, is a trick I got from my mom where I would take a slice of lemon and microwave it for a little while and then drink microwave it in water and then drink the mixture of water and juice, and it helps the throat.
I feel so well prepared after this these vocal lessons here.
You can find me on that Golden Anniversary blog. Finally, my post has been up a week by the time you hear this. Only about 4 weeks late.
I mean, it's a good post.
I'd written it on time. It was just 4 weeks late going up because other people before me were late.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, yeah, so
Jeff,
can...
bless his heart, needed a break.
Yes. Yeah, so you can check out what I thought of 10 anime from 1994. Not much is the answer.
Not much.
Well, if you're talking about sort of big shows, there's no big shows from 1994.
And that was the reason you chose 1994,
That
right?
is true, yes.
That was very good of you.
Yeah, not everything can be big. Yeah, at least they were all TV shows as well. Not, I wasn't having to sneak in OEVs or movies. And you can find me on Twitter at awesome_engine. I'm on the internet. I have a website. It's called awesome-engine.com. By the time you read this, who knows? There may be a post up about Mama is a fourth grader. I can't remember which grade she is.
Oh, wow. You're watching that?
I am, yes. It's a 1992 anime, so I'm going to watch the first episode of it.
Oh, man. Tell me how... I'm looking forward to hearing from you about what that is, because I've been eyeing that for a long time with a mixture of terror and curiosity.
It is... If I remember correctly, the plot is that the main character in the future as an adult sends her child back in time to be raised by herself while she's a child.
Yes. Yes.
Sounds crazy.
Yeah. It's a recurring theme in shoujo manga and shoujo anime it's like having a doll, but the doll's actually real. It's a real baby or an alien or some sort of fairy princess.
Mm-hmm.
And you can also, I've not plugged it for a while, I have a Tumblr, which is dynamitingthebrain.tumblr.com, where I post various nonsense.
I've not tumbled in a while, so
I unfollowed you.
Oh, Brian, why?
I think it was the picture of somebody with an erect penis. I didn't really.
Do you know who that was? That was Snap, a previous guest. I left my computer logged in at
home. I assumed that was the case, but it took you a while to notice.
Well, yeah, it took me weeks to notice, and I just happened to go on Tumblr. I was like, hold on a second. I didn't post that.
I don't remember posting that.
Now, was that Snap's erect penis or just an erect penis?
It was just a random erect penis.
Yeah, just a random, well-endowed gentleman. In a nutshell. Oof. You still follow us, don't you, Bradley?
I follow your podcast, I follow Brian's blog, and I follow his Tumblr if he posts it on Twitter. I don't follow anything you do, Anthony. I'm sorry.
Oh,
you're a mystery. That's because you only tell us about your Twitter each time. You keep everything else under a veil.
Well, like what?
Well, you don't Twitch anymore. You don't talk about your Tumblr anymore.
I know. I'm just a boring old fart.
It's true.
That's what it is.
Man, I don't even like League of Legends, so I'm not going to watch that either.
Oh,
no, I wish you luck in your casting career.
Now, if I go to this expo, am I allowed to heckle you?
I don't think there'll be any chance for heckling. The hype that I will bring upon London Expo will be far too loud for your voice, Brian.
Oh, yeah, I've been in events at London Expo. It's just a load of crowd noise while somebody tries to make themselves heard. Good luck with that. Hope you got a loud microphone.
Apparently Mad Cats are giving us all the equipment, so it's a big deal.
How were you chosen? Did you just volunteer, or have you done shoutcasting before?
Well, a friend, he's organizing it all, and he's like part of the expo group now, the MCM guys, and he originally wanted me to be part of it, and just my flatmate who I live with, me and him did some shoutcasting, and he was like, yeah, he's good enough. So, yeah.
Good luck with that. Good luck with that. I understand League, every esport except StarCraft at this point, I guess, needs more shoutcasters. So
yeah, especially League,
especially Dota. Come play the superior game with me sometime.
I broke my mouse the other day playing Dota. That's what I thought of Dota.
Sounds about right.
Yeah. Oof, God, that game.
Right. Anyway, as always, you can find this podcast on DynamiteInTheBrain.com. On facebook.com/dynamiteinthebrain and on iTunes. So why not subscribe and write us a review so that more people can find out about the trick diamond that is Dynamite in the Brain. Goodbye!
Your life's gone down the drain. Your body's wrecked with pain. There's just one thing to blame. Dynamite in the brain. Dynamite in the brain. Dynamite in the brain. Dynamite in the brain.